Welcome to the Fireside Chat. Sit back, relax, and enjoy Paul Sporer and Nick Pollock.
What is happening? Welcome to the Fireside Chat. My name is Nick Pollock, and joining me, not in a teal sweatshirt. No. He is in his fluffy robe today. That is Paul Sporer. Good to see you, Sporer.
What's going on, Nick? How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. I've missed you. This is on
me. Took an all-star break. No. Yeah, not on you. We took an all-star break. No, we're allowed.
I understand. I was in Cape Cod and visiting 2 weeks ago, and then I couldn't really find the time last week. I was just overwhelmed. Lots of stuff that I couldn't get done, and Spore is the best and worked with me. So
no
here
problem
we are.
At all. Here we did still do games though, and we will get to games. Those later. So keep that in mind. We're still doing
absolutely
things.
It's getting look at this I'm surprised, and this week it's we had the all-star break, we have the trade deadline next week. Sporer and I are going to finalize those details, but I am going to be actually in Texas next week. I'm excited to find some time in Austin on Thursday and Friday or Friday to see this wonderful man. I don't know if you're going to be able to make it down to San Antonio to do a live Tuesday.
Be kind of amazing if we could.
Trade deadline. Probably not. But we will be doing that stream next week. Can't wait. I know this isn't what we have on our topic, but just very quickly, who are the guys that you're just, oh my gosh, those guys. I mean, it's every single year, by the way, everyone, we do this live thing, go to the Pitchless homepage. I think also in the Fangraphs one, we often simulcast it. It's Sporer and I for the last 2 hours of the deadline. Just here we are. Come hang
just
out.
Going
with us
crazy with it. Hoping but that we get activity, which we
absolutely
have in a lot of the
bringing
shows.
Guests too, which is great.
Yep.
And my favorite tradition is Paul Sporer being so upset at the Detroit Tigers for not trading away the people that they should.
Yep. And that could happen again this year, although I'm a little bit more open to it. For me, outside of losing maybe one or two in the next week, they got to trade Flaherty. You can make the case that even if they win, they don't lose a game between now and the deadline, they should still trade Flaherty, and I would listen to that argument.
Yeah,
I don't agree that everything else has to be traded. Justin and I actually had a fun little debate about that on the podcast yesterday, where he's saying trade everyone, trade Mark Canha. I'm like, you're not getting anything for Mark Canha. Yeah. So if you're a game or two under 500, you can trade Flaherty while still showing the team yes, we do care about the long term. We know Flaherty can help us in the long term, and they might even be able to get something that helps Flaherty in the short term. If they bring in a hitter that joins the lineup right away and they're two games under 500, they can still push forward on this year without just selling everything. You don't have to go Canha, Urshela, Jake Rogers, Chafin, Miller, and Flaherty. I don't believe that they should do that. I think Flaherty, and then depending on how the record is this next week, figure out everything else with the Tigers.
Now, it wouldn't be fun if every team that finished above 500 made the playoffs for.
Ooh, just so it's X number of teams, and then you situate buys if it happens to be an odd number?
Correct. Or you one game playoffs, essentially establishing a six teams remaining. Then you have two buys and three plays six and four plays five.
I wouldn't be against that.
Because then your Tigers would be in this really interesting situation.
Then we're even closer to where we're at right now, because we're game under.
Decisions. Flaherty means so much. It's more teams. They can get more for him, but then do they want to
trade him? Yeah.
Right. That's.
I think I still trade him in that scenario. I think I still do, because you can help the 25, 26, 27 Tigers so much by trading Flaherty.
But here's the thing, though. I've even heard things about school.
I know, but that's pie in the sky. If it comes back for some of the deals that the people have been putting together for the Orioles, that's one thing. MLB Network did one this morning that I actually took a screenshot of. If it's Holiday and Kerstead for Tarek Skubal and Jason Foley, I'm listening, right? I'm doing that. That's foundational difference. Anything short of that, no chance.
Sure. Okay, well, it's going to be a really fun time, so guys, check us out. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, 4 p.m. Eastern time, we'd start that one. The trade deadline goes to 6 p.m. Eastern time.
Okay, should be good. I might maybe start a little earlier.
Maybe we'll start a little earlier, because if it's 4 p.m. Eastern time, it will be there. You know.
Yes, we'll
let you guys know on Twitter. All that kind of stuff. We'll finalize those details later this week. But yeah, tradition like no other. I don't know if I'll have a suit. I'll see.
That's okay.
I can pack one into the bag. Maybe I'll have the anti suit.
And maybe we go casual this year. We have suited it up in recent years.
Clothing. And by the way, the opposite of suit is not nothing, guys. Get that out of your head. I meant it more of just ridiculous clothing.
Silly stuff.
You know, I got some silly stuff. Rope. I might be able to steal a rope while I'm there.
Now we're talking.
Yeah, now we're talking. And of course, this is the Fireside Chat. We are also, I know I keep hinting at this, guys. We had the All-Star break. We had some vacation, stuff like that. But we are actually going to be shortly putting this up onto YouTube in the next, I believe, in 2 weeks from now. We're going to be starting to do that. So look out for that on our YouTube channel as well for the video edition of this Fireside Chat moving forward. Looks beautiful, by the way. And so today's actual topic, Sporn. Who have you changed course on this year? These are the guys entering the season. We think, okay, no, this is who he is. This is this kind of guy. And really at the halfway point, yes, we've had certain things that, oh man, look at this. Chris Sale is just really good all of a sudden. That's cool. Mm-hmm. Didn't really change course. It was more questions of like health or so. I'm thinking more of, look, who I thought of as this guy previously, throw that completely out the window. This is someone completely different. And entering 2025, I'm not going to be really considering that pitcher similarly to who I thought of entering this year. And I think there's at least one that's just absurdly obvious. And I imagine that that would be the same first guy for you.
Got to be Seth Lugo to lead this list off, yes. Right? He is throwing I think I called it on the RotoWire show yesterday, the SiriusXM show. He's peak Kyle Hendricksing right now, right? Like there's a few of these every year, these guys that aren't overly dominant, but everything comes together and it's not a direct link to Kyle Hendricks because he throws harder, et cetera, but it's this guy that really plays up well beyond the level that we expect. And it's not fully backed in terms of like strikeout to walk ratio and all that, but there's a lot backing it up. Yeah. And the biggest move for Seth Lugo, of course, is that he switched stadiums to really help the biggest issue that he has, which is home runs. The mm-hmm. one like statistical issue that consistently has gotten Lugo over the years has been a decently high home run rate, especially these last four seasons coming into this year where he was no better than 1.2 homers per nine, which is sure. kind of a high rate. This year, 0.73 with Kansas City's park playing a big role in that. The control has always been there. Obviously, the defense is helping behind him. He's also getting lucky too, right? It's okay to acknowledge that, but I also don't think it's just all luck that's happening around Lugo. I think the way he's pitching, everything that he's doing is in a scenario to kind of maximize the defensive value of KC, the park value, and his great pitching, and voila, ace caliber season. So Lugo on a different level right now where he's like, you know, an easy top 20 ranking. And of course I was nowhere near that coming into the year. I liked the move and, you know, I'm not trying to be like, oh, I was on this. I thought he was a nice pickup for them, but I had him 57th coming into the year. And I thought sure. that was a fine ranking for Lugo.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. 2023, I was all for Lugo as a steady Toby through the year, like a 360 ERA, 120 whip. And actually won, 23% K rate is just kind of like, all right, these are good matchups. Like, let's roll with this. He had some ebbs and flows, but that's kind of the fun part of the list and everything is like you see the little pockets here and there. And this year, I mean, completely different guy. Eight pitches now, much more extensive with it, better cutter. He's just different. Park factor absolutely is helping him bring the 117 homer per nine down to 0.73. I'd also mentioned that, yeah, the more pitches that you can throw confidently and at different arm angles, the more you're going to keep batters off of the barrel, essentially.
Yep.
And preventing clearer pitches to home to know what to hit out in the first place. So Lugo certainly is one of those. And we have to consider him more as that. It's interesting. I'm not quite convinced that he's in that ace is going to ace territory. I know it sounds crazy with a 2.3 ERA and a 1.04 whip right now. But it's almost like the Eflin situation from last year, like a tinge of it.
No, I don't even know if it's a tinge. I think it's full blown similar.
Well, I mean, there is, I think with Eflin, there was slightly less quality in everything than with Lugo.
But more K's, more, like, which I think made people believe it more with Eflin.
Sure, that makes sense. Yeah, I think Eflin's like cutter and curve were just so good. I mean, and like Lugo's doesn't quite have that peak of it, but it's a lot more just everything is very good.
Exactly.
And but what the thought about Eflin entering the season, I was still obviously like, I think it was top 25 at least for Eflin. And obviously that has changed. That's someone we would probably say is the other direction. We can all just kind of nod our head to that one. Okay, cool. That was a peak. With Lugo, it does feel like he's squeezing the most out of what he has.
For sure.
And when I see that, when I see pitchers who are essentially performing across the board at a higher level with everything, it's harder to believe that that will continue for another full year.
I agree.
So I would be cautious, at least, I'm not saying that he's bad in the second half, but Lugo is improved. I think I expect to be the low man on Seth Lugo next year.
I think,
and I'm not looking forward to that.
I think even if the second half is his ERA indicators for Lugo, which is like upper threes, 3.77 Sierra right now, with a 1.20 whip, nobody's upset by that, even in a shallow league, because he's on a great team. He has 12 wins already. He'll continue to get the wins. So even if the ratios hurt a little bit in your 10s and 12s, you still got to keep him in there enough to get the win potential. And while he doesn't have a huge strikeout rate, Seth Lugo also goes deeper in the games to kind of mitigate that. So your volume of Ks is still usually pretty good. So for now, I still think he's an easy must start everywhere, even a couple. 3-4 bad starts in a row, or maybe a pocket where there's two duds, a medium, and a good. So it ends up looking like a four start cluster. That's still not going to take me off Lugo. I think he's earned enough rope that we don't even overly panic to a little blip.
Yeah, and what's so interesting to me is that there's this real. This is obviously one of the things I think that's the hardest for us to figure out every year, and it's often where we have gaps in our analysis, or at least with gaps in our assessments. It's Lugo is in this pocket of like, okay, it was Zach Eflin last year. There's lots of Aaron Civale as well entering this year. I'm like Jose Barrios, Logan Webb, these volume guys. And the problem with the volume guys, and generally why I'm just kind of more passive on them, is because of trying to figure out how much they can squeeze out in a given season. And I mean, we're seeing it right now with Ranger Suarez, like entering the year. I didn't really think too highly of Ranger Suarez. I didn't, you know,
I'm not sure.
I wasn't like, cool, go and get it, right? I pretty much saw him as like, all right, when he goes on a good run, we go for this and like play the matchups and whatnot. He didn't have good matchups right away, so I was kind of late on it, but other people got in and, you know, I got burned for that. But my point is, he's someone that 3 months stretch absurd, and now we're kind of seeing him be like, he's fine. He's kind of the normal Ranger Suarez. Now we saw a peak from him for 12 starts 1 year, and then it teetered off. The next year we saw ups and downs of it, but it's kind of going back to the Eduardo Rodriguez thing, the Marco Gonzalez of old.
And you're saying Lugo could do the exact same, right?
Right. He's a higher end of it, but it's
sure.
You know, but right. But I think we're on the same page of just assessing in the off season volume guys. And I think it's something I'm always going to be, I'm going to miss in some way, because I'm not going to be on the other side of it, of being too aggressive for it. Because
and I think that's fair.
Aaron Civale's situation, I think, is a prime example.
Of and saying, Eflin. Like,
yeah, and Eflin too, right. I was just saying, look, these guys, there's going to be someone that is going to surprise us in this way. And they're just going to be in really good rhythm with what they have. I mean, you know, Ranger Suarez, his changeup was so good for a while. He literally had 8% CSW on that changeup yesterday. So,
and I think he's a perfect guy to bring up here, because he has come back to the Ranger Suarez level, which is still very usable. I know he's lost 4 straight decisions, but again, he has higher win potential because he's part of Philadelphia. So you still want to use him. You still want to keep him, but he's back to being Ranger Suarez. So maybe he's more of a team streamer. You don't have to start him every time out. Lugo, like Nick said, is the higher end version of that. So we're still not going to overreact, even with a little pocket of trouble. And, but it does make it harder to bet going forward. So like in a dynasty,
it's really difficult.
And you don't trade for a guy like this.
Yeah. And also, I mean, even with Eflin, it's not like Eflin's just like the worst thing ever for you.
No,
you know, that fell off, but he's still, you know, you should be rostered in most leagues and everything like that. I was actually talking to Sport beforehand about like rostership. I was surprised it's 80% with Eflin, but more so that there are guys underneath who should be higher.
It wasn't so much.
It's not quite a spread of ranking. It's just like,
exactly.
They drafted Eflin, but then never let him go, I guess. I was like, okay, I understand it. Well, guys like Taj Bradley, who weren't necessarily drafted, but then now have deserved rostership across all leagues. And there's really someone too that I've certainly changed my tune on. I've absolutely, you know, banged the drum about like command is the market and efficiency, and those that cannot command the ball, I'm not interested in, and I feel like it's going to be a hipster, headache inducing pitcher stifling the entire roster, etc. And here comes Taj Bradley, who I actually had on my team and then was going against Baltimore twice in a row and I dropped him. And oh boy.
Been there with that.
But here's the thing. I understand it now more. I believe more of what he's doing, which is four seamers and splitters as his main two things, and actually getting strikes with both of them consistently. That is something he wasn't able to do before. He's certainly changed my mind, not just because of the results, because of skills, I think, changing, and also mental approach changing, which is something you never really know with these guys. We've seen so many volatile arms that are just like, yep, you're just volatile forever, buddy.
Absolutely.
And there is some volatility still in Taj Bradley, but I mean, are you convinced that Taj Bradley is going to be at this level second half and next year? I mean, not necessarily at this level, but like clearly inside the top 40 entering next year.
This level or better. I had him as an ace potential. Like, I think he is a stud. I was big on Taj Bradley last year, famously, famous within regards to my podcast, nothing beyond that. But I put a bunch of money on him in the main event. Didn't quite work out, the $300 bids or whatever. He was okay, but you know, you took the crap end of it there and ended up with a 5.59 ERA by the end of it. But I never gave up on Taj Bradley as a pitcher. Didn't get him everywhere this year because he was somebody that wasn't in the rotation to start the season. So you had to kind of pick him up in waivers. But I remain fully committed to this guy, and I think he's a true stud. 2.63 ERA, 1.05 WHIP. Don't necessarily mean he's going to keep those rates going, but as far as a premium guy, I am with you, Nick. I think he has that level and could develop into an ace in these coming years. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean next year, right? We hear the phrase prospect growth isn't linear, and while he is no longer a rookie or eligible for prospect lists, Taj Bradley is still very much a prospect in that he has 180 major league innings. He might ebb and flow a bit, but this is a profile you absolutely want. Taj Bradley is a rising stock. I think he's an ace potential. I'm picking him up everywhere I can in terms of trades. He's not available on any waiver wires, but yes, I'm fully in on Bradley.
Nice. Someone else that obviously, I mean, of these young guys like Garrett Crochet, okay. This is one of the funnier things to me. Like, I had this whole crew of dudes. They're like the young ones getting opportunities. And, you know, I will continue to just mention, yep, AJ Puck and D.L. Hall. Remember those guys? We moved on quickly, as we're supposed to do. But the thing is also, Eric Crochet was in that tier, and I wasn't sold. I didn't like that he had a really bad matchup against Atlanta in his second start. I watched that first one, didn't like the slider, felt that the four-seamer wasn't as dominant as I wanted it to be, and I just kind of felt, this is kind of a wild, volatile thing, and I'm going to get burned against Atlanta. And I think I said, like, it's fine with a spec ad, but I'm not feeling great about it. And boy, was I wrong. I mean, there was a moment too. It was, I think this after six starts, he had three really bad ones. And it was when he transitioned from four seamers to sliders, but then Garrett Crochet said, you know what, fine, I'm going to throw cutters and changeups. And then changeup eventually went away. That was really just like one start against the Twins that he was like, okay, I'm not going to get burned this time against you. Here's changeups. Haha. But I mean, there's something to be said about that. Like, the whole point of, I think, this topic is to highlight these are guys who actually made genuine skill changes, and these are what they are. And it's why they are more believable to us. For me, it's Garrett Crochet doing cutters with that four seamer, and it's just guys that literally have no idea which one it is. And it's such good extension and such good velocity that like they don't have time to say, no, this is the cutter, and to adapt. They have to pretty much go 50-50 each time, and it's stupid hard to hit. So Garrett Crochet is obviously one of those.
Couldn't agree more on Crochet, watching him develop in season. Yeah, and we had talked about, hey, get him for the Detroit start, maybe sit him for the Atlanta start, and then we'll reassess. Well, he ends up dominating against Atlanta, so then we dive in, does well at KC, but then hits that three-start blip where some people probably cut in shower leagues. I'm not going to say that I don't think that there was any merit to that, because this was a guy who had three good starts and then three bad ones, and you're like, well, who is he? Is he any different right now? If you did cut, obviously you took a big L on that, because then he tore off these most recent 14 starts of a 1.74 ERA. But he's been unbelievable, and he's a guy that, for me, Garrett Crochet, when he's upright and pitching, he is a top 10 type guy.
Yeah, there are a couple other guys we want to talk about, and we're going to talk about all of those after this break. So you have a couple other ones I think are pretty obvious, like Luis Gil. He's throwing strikes. Yay. There's Jake Irvin, who has a curveball and a four seamer. And I have to ask, like, do you think that Jake Irvin next year is going to be ranked inside people's top 50?
I'll take the small cop out and say it definitely depends how this season finishes, but generally, no.
Right. So this isn't including how you think the season will finish, right? So you think he's going to slow down to the second half? Like, I mean, if he continues the same way, he's going to be in the top 50.
I just don't think people are going to give him the love. Like, I think he's going to stay pretty good, maybe not 344, 109 for Jake Irvin, but I think he's going to still end up with a pretty good season. Let's say like 365, 114 as a final season line.
Whatever, yeah.
I just don't think he'll get the love being on the Nats and having a modest K rate. So I don't.
Sure. So let's say he completes it as it is. Are you putting Jake Irvin in the top 50 next year?
I would think so. Okay. I am pretty intrigued by him, and I'm pretty bullish on Washington going forward too. So I think that if you're talking about win context, I just think they're putting some things together, especially with the offense. I think James Wood is a dude. Dylan Cruz will be up shortly thereafter. Luis Garcia developed this year. I think they've got some things. CJ Abrams looking like a stud. So they're putting together a foundation there. And then, you know, we could talk maybe a bit about your guy Gore. We've gone through some ebbs and flows with him this year. But Gore, Irvin, Parker at the front end there is not a star-studded trio, but it's something to build upon. So again, they're in fringe contention this year, similar to my Tigers, and I think they can build upon that going forward next year.
It's pretty hilarious. You're literally wearing the Nationals hat. I didn't even realize until this moment.
I actually forgot about that too.
Oh, I thought it was just Walgreens the entire time.
I made that joke today too on another show. You go, nice Nats hat. No, this is Walgreens down with CBS.
Beautiful. Love it. By the way, so with Jake Irvin, curveball has been really good. He just got 9 out of 50 whiffs on this four seamer in a start. I'm like, what? You're not supposed to do that. It seems very much of a flash in a pan to me. Unless Jake Irvin has another legitimate pitch outside the curve, it does turn into too much of a Charlie Morton situation to me.
Morton, the guy with like a decade of great years.
How the decline happened. Because he became essentially only a curveball guy.
Correct.
Didn't have the curveball and a cutter anymore. Anything like that. So became only change curveball. And that's why it's like back and forth. While Jake Irvin, maybe there's something to having three different types of fastballs and that makes those pitches work effectively. It's kind of like Ben Lively. Like, what the heck? How is this like still going? I don't really know, but nuts. Okay. I find myself needing more from Jake Irvin to put him inside my top 50 next year. Also, because there's so many good pitchers.
Well, that's true too. Oh, that's true too. There's tons of great pitchers. But I like Irvin, Jake Irvin. So I'll be keeping tight tabs on him. We'll see how things go as the season evolves. But I do think, like I said, even if he does finish well, a lot of folks aren't going to give him credit. So it might be a situation where you can have a semi-negative slant on him. I don't want to say negative, but you know, have some questions about him and not have to pay much. So maybe you end up still liking him a little bit if he comes way cheaper than you're anticipating. If you're worried about him being top 50 and he comes in as like SP62, are you then open to Irvin at that price point?
I honestly probably not. I mean, it will be my anticipation. I'm always really bad at this, by the way. I do this every year. I'm like, oh man, I love this guy. It's kind of like, you know, my 14th round or 15th round. And then he's like the eighth round, you know?
Oh, it's so hard to, especially at this point in the year, to like guesstimate how next year's drafts are going to go.
And what kind of bothers me a little, and I hate how much I'm influenced by it. I still am. And I can't remove myself from it. Is the fact that NFBC drafts early on define ADPs across the board.
Yep.
And we needed change that, because that's 15 teamer. That
would be the change
more in like not taking risks, not doing X, Y, and Z. It's changing my perception of what is safe, what isn't. There are certain guys that I generally wouldn't favor that I know I push up a little bit more that I'm going to really push away this year, like Gausman and Valdez and Logan Webb, for example, which I understand why in that kind of format are more valuable and we're more aggressive.
I was not in on Gausman this year.
I mean, I'm with you. And I'm also just like, right, Logan Webb, you're not that. And like, there are a lot of like hard things that projections do that I get swayed by a little bit, and I have to kind of.
I still like Webb a lot. I'm not really out on him.
He's my top 35, I think, for a first world teamer. I'm not saying he's bad. It's just that, well, he was top 15 or something like that.
Sure, sure. Yeah, he was rated high, and he's not. I mean, his WHIP's 20 points higher this year, 127. So is he somebody that you've gone down on, right? Because we're talking.
Yeah, I had more expectation for the sideways. Oh my gosh. Okay.
Sorry. He's somebody that you've lowered your outlook on, Logan Webb.
Unbelievable. This is a family friendly thing. I don't know why that was a bad phrase. I think it's just Indiana, Australia or something.
Correct.
Anyway, the changeup has oddly not been as much of the thing. And he feels like he's like trying to figure out a little bit more. But also felt like, yeah, he was getting more fortunate in the hip or nine column than previously. And for someone like Logan Webb, that is constantly going to allow contact, it's just always kind of like, do you really want to go for that? And it's kind of the same thing with Framber Valdez, especially when his strike rates are so weird with his curveball and his changeup, and he still hasn't really figured out how to throw a strike with a pitch that's not a sinker to a right-hander, and it's driving me up the wall.
Fair.
So I understand that start by start, especially like quality start leagues, is not that much of a thing, but like his WHIP is what, like 135 right now? And
127 for Webb.
127, okay.
That's high. I mean, that's high in a 10 or 12.
Right. But no, I'm
that's high in a 15.
Oh, gosh, yeah. And I still think about the texts back and forth with Jason Collette about Framber Valdez versus Cole Reagans. Yeah, no, but it made a lot of sense early on.
Sure. And I'm a huge Framber guy, so I'm not downing Jason. I'm just saying he has splendidly lost that one.
But then again, the second half is still here, and I'll be the first to tell you guys, like, yeah, there are some warning signs of Cole Reagan's velocity and stuff that I'm a little worried about. Given he hasn't had a full season yet.
Can I go back to something real fast?
Absolutely,
just to underscore, because it's something I struggle with, so I wonder if others do too. And I said it, and what I said was correct, but I said Logan Webb, you know, 127 WHIP, that's even bad in a 15, and I think it gets underrated that 127 is anything over 125 is really starting to be a problem.
Yeah.
127 WHIP, if your team was 127, you'd be ranked 14th in my 15 team league right now. Like, right. That's bad. So yeah. Webb is, and I come in as the biggest Webb guy this year. Webb and Valdez were my righty lefty workhorses. 359 you can live with, 127 you cannot, and of course he does not back it up with an abundance of K's nor an abundance of wins, because the Giants aren't very good. I will say I was hoping that the addition of Matt Chapman would help the infield defense, but Brett Wisely starting at short, I don't, you know, he's not very good over there. Tyro Estrada is a bad second baseman, so Chapman can only cover his little area.
Does he exist? The shortstop, did you just make up that name?
I was seeing if you're paying attention. Brett Wisely. Like, it is a real player, and like, he's playing shortstop every day for them. Well, actually he's bouncing between short and second. Who else is playing short? Tyler Fitzgerald, and I don't know anything about his defense. So I think Giants fans, correct me if I'm wrong on Fitzgerald, but it sounds like they have a great third baseman, a mediocre shortstop, and a bad second baseman, and I'm sure that's hurting Webb a little bit. When I thought they, as much as Nick Ahmed can't hit, I thought Nick Ahmed, Matt Chapman on the left side of the infield would have been great for
Logan Webb. And another guy like that you didn't really point out was Mackenzie Gore, where the team defense has really let him down. That's why.
So let's talk about him, right? Because we've gone through some ebbs and flows with him.
Gore is hilarious. I mean, yes. So like, beginning of the year, I was completely out on Gore because I was just like, I don't think he's going to have the direction that he needs.
Preseason? Are you talking like fall?
Preseason. I'm talking fall. Then all of a sudden he starts throwing super hard in the spring. I'm hearing about like he's changing this and that. He's doing this. I'm like, okay, no, I'm pushing up Mackenzie Gore. And then now he's inconsistent start to start, and the team defense is behind him. He has a 3.63 BABIP, which is, I think, second percentile. But his ICR rate is 12th percentile. So it's not like he's not allowing. He's just allowing me contact, and he's just getting burned by it. He's allowing tough contact, that is ICR, ideal contact rate. So how often guys get good things against him?
And he allows a low amount of that?
No, 12th percentile isn't like bad.
12th percentile. Okay. So Gore's allowing too much good contact, and the defense can't help him because of it. Yep.
Yeah, okay. It's not contact you want for a pitcher, and also the defense is not helping him. So
got it.
That's why the WHIP is as high as it is. The walk rate, honestly, is not as scary for me. It's like 4-1 or so.
Yeah.
And I think those are days where he feels he gets overworked because guys are on base. And I think that's also why you see like 7 innings, 1 earned run, 1 hit, 8 Ks. And then the other one's like, okay, it's 5 innings of, or 4 innings of 4 earned runs and 4 walks. Because I think it cascades more so.
Classic cherry bomb for Gore?
Yeah, completely now. Which is so frustrating because he's so close. And it's, normally with these volatile arms, there's like one aspect to them that's really good and everything else is just kind of whatever. You don't have it. Gore's not like that.
He's the other way.
He's 97 and it's like an amazing foundation to me. And then he actually has a really good curveball and a really good changeup and a really good slider, but they aren't always there.
Exactly.
And the four seamer isn't always upstairs. Sometimes it is erratic. He actually went down to 95 as opposed to 97 his last start. And I'm just like, oh gosh. So I've gone from like, one. I'm so out. I'm like, whoa, I'm in. Now I'm like, I don't know. So I'm undecided. John Doolittle obviously is having an impact with that rotation, at least for Gore. And also Corbin threw like 50% cutters finally. Thank you. Patrick Corbin, like, why not experiment?
Right, exactly. Nothing else is working. Why not just go for something cool at this point if you're him?
But yeah, great points there about, thanks for bringing up Mackenzie Gore. I mean, do you feel the same way about him?
Yeah, so like you kind of brought me in to start looking more at him. I was watching all these Mitchell Parker starts and Jake Irvin. I was like, well, you know what? I'm just going to start watching three Nats games a week for some reason. That's why I know how so much about their offense. But yeah, I started watching all three and like, yes, okay, this is working with Gore. Things are going well. I have noticed, I'm glad that the data backs up. I'm like, he gets smashed when they hit it. Like these hits are well struck, to your point about the ICR, where I'm like, oh, so maybe it isn't just BABIP bad luck. And this is why we always say, don't use BABIP as a luckometer and just say, oh, it's 361. It has to come down. Gore is contributing to it. So, but the elements are there. And if you watch, take a random slice of 4 or 5 of his starts this year and compare it against 4 or 5 of last year. And you do see the difference. The pieces are there.
He's a different guy. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's a better guy. And I still have love for Gore, but it is going to be volatile this year, the rest of the way, and maybe even into next year. I still think he's taking steps forward, though. Just be careful with him. I know that's not great advice because it's like, well, what do you do? Sometimes I'm going to start him. Sometimes I'm not. Like at St. Louis this week, I said yes with Gore. Where were you at this week for him?
Yeah,
it's on
it.
Friday. Okay.
I do it.
And then at Arizona next week, if these two are bad, then we start to reassess a good bit for him. But I'm going to give him the shot in two decent parks against solid but not overwhelming offenses. And then I got to check in with Gore after these two.
So so really, there are just a couple more. I feel like, okay, these guys are definitively different, at least from how I've thought about them. I mean, obviously, we have Bobby Miller at the moment. And that's an interesting one because I personally believe that Bobby Miller is just still kind of hurt and never was able to really get back to it. And that's just kind of weird. And I'm going to be so in on Bobby Miller next year.
Okay. That was going to be my question then.
And that's, I think that we're both on the kind of on the same page on that one.
Fully.
Same with Walker Buehler. Same thing.
Yep.
Wherever he signs, all that kind of stuff. There's Luis L. Ortiz, who's doing some interesting things where he used to not be able to throw strikes at all and only had like sinkers and sliders. And they're both, you know, inconsistent. He has a new cutter and he's been on a lovely run. I actually will mention him a bit later as well. And that is kind of a new guy to me. It's not really one of the big ones or something like that, but I do want to at least mention that here's someone I just completely said, like, absolutely not, no way. And now I'm like, oh, you know what? There is actually something interesting here.
Yeah, I like Luis L. Ortiz. A little bit more interest on the front end there. Not saying I was like in on him or called it, but like kept him on my DC list, which is Draft Champions, 50 rounds, live arm. And then as he started to do stuff, I've been moving Luis L. Ortiz up the board. In fact, we were both going to go for him for what we were going to talk about later with him. He's pitching well. They're putting something together out there, right? We talk about the two aces with Skeens and Jones. You don't think so?
I mean, I don't know. Are they going to do the right thing at the right time to actually put them over the edge? Or are they just going to?
I mean, so far they are. Work,
but then on the offense side?
Well, on the offensive side, they still need some. I mean, is it their fault that O'Neill Cruz isn't quite kind of reaching the heights that, I mean,
no, I mean, he's more moving. Of like, are they going to get a free agent to actually make that team?
I don't think that they've bypassed any right now that make them look bad. If, you know, as they continue to develop here, they're a couple games over 500. If this year, this offseason coming up and the next, they do nothing to add like a foundational piece to the offense, then I would agree with you. But I don't think that they've wasted an opportunity yet. Well, I think this year is a big step forward.
Yep.
And depending on how they finish, they need to start being more serious about free agents.
I'm very skeptical.
I think that's totally fair. Nutting has given you nothing to think that he's going to do the right thing. Right. So you're right from that standpoint. I'm optimistic for Pirates fans as a fellow fan of a crummy team.
Absolutely.
I want things to go well.
But then also another one is Gavin Stone that I was very much like, I just know. I don't like change of first guys. Props to Stone for increasing his velocity, having a little bit better of a slider as well. Mm-hmm. Certainly come through. But at the end of the day, though, it's still like a 20% K rate. He's not
still not missing enough bats.
You know, it's not that much
putting enough guys away.
He had a really good stretch. And I think that's kind of I think that's really diluting how we perceive Stone as a whole. For me, he's a Toby. He's not going to be someone that, like, I think takes another step in the offseason. He really needs a big whiff pitch. And I don't think the slider and curve, I don't think he's a spin guy.
Well, that is the step. I would put it. Would be finding a whiff pitch, but there's no reason for us to believe that it's there right now. So I do agree with you at this juncture with Gavin Stone. Yeah. And I came in as a high guy. You came in as a low. We kind of met where you said, okay, you know, you gave some very compelling points to not be so aggressive. I totally agree that we're anchored on some of the front end of Gavin Stone's season. He's a 19% strikeout rate, folks. You're talking 10s and 12s. He got to win almost every time out. And he has 9 wins, but he got to win almost every time out to be worth it. With a 123 whip and 19% Ks in your shallower leagues.
Yeah. So I want to just talk quickly about the second half, just kind of who we think could change our view for 2025 there. We're going to talk about that after this break. So looking at the second half right now, there obviously are guys that have been disappointments this year. And I am kind of curious if there's someone that you think can go on a big one. I'll give you one right now that I think we're going to be looking at and go, oh man, he really woke up. And I can't quit him. It's Yusei Kikuchi, man. I think that Yusei Kikuchi
on a new team.
Maybe it's possible. I don't. A good point. Absolutely. Four seamer does not get enough love for what it is. This pitch, as far as a fan four goes, Fantastic Four. That is the four elements that create a whiff with a four seamer. It is stupid good.
Okay, I had not heard this. DLG. That's amazing.
Fantastic Four is what I call it.
I like that. A lot.
And that would be the velocity, 80th percentile at 95, 96. It's his extension, which is 86th percentile at 7 feet. His IVB, which is 70th percentile at 16 inches of vert. And his height-adjusted VAA, which is 98th percentile, one of the flattest four-seamers in the majors. And what you normally don't get when you get a flat four-seamer is you don't get vert because you have to lower your arm angle, which means you're not on top of the ball, which means you don't get the spin efficiency. But because Kikuchi gets down and drops and drives, isn't the tallest guy out there. He's 6 feet tall. He's able to actually get that low attack angle and also get some vert on it. It is so good. And the only problem I've seen over the past like month or so is that this changeup has been there. And he stopped throwing the slider, which was so good for 2 months. He had this amazing 2 months of just, oh, change is bad. I'll just go four seamer slider curve. And then it went away. And now it's starting to come back. Changeup has been really bad and the slider has been utilized more. We just saw 13 strikeouts from him against the Giants. We've saw 14 combined in the last two starts. The strikeouts are so clearly there. I think we're going to see Kikuchi just launch as he gets that curve slider four seamer approach working out.
And I'd really love to see it be on a contender because then, as I always bring up, the win potential would start to really rise for Kikuchi as well.
Yeah.
He is a very talented arm. He's a guy we have talked about a lot. You know, a few false starts and a few springs where he was teasing and tantalizing. Excellent second half run last year. I was still a little skeptical. This year comes in, looks good early, fumbles, getting it back now, though, and I am intrigued. So I think that is a good call out. And again, I really think they should be incentivized to move him. He is a free agent after this year. They're not good. He's 33. Why would you keep Yusei Kikuchi? So that's a good one.
Absolutely. Who do you have for the second half that you feel like is going to just
okay, this guy's already kind of doing it, but talk about anchoring and how it can misframe guys. I think Bailey Ober is being misframed a little bit because he has a composite 4.04 ERA. And I think that, you know, people will look at that and be like, I know it shouldn't happen, right? You should be able to look at the 106 whip and move on, and 9 wins and be like, this guy's good. And the components that go with it, but ERA carries the day a lot. And I always talk about how these mediocre ERA, great whip guys get underrated. Joe Musgrove, before he broke through, was one of these types of guys. Plenty more in history where the whip gets underrated. I think Ober kind of already is breaking through because really, if you take out the two KC starts, they're the only team that has really gotten to him. And frankly, if you just go from the beginning, you know, get rid of that first start, it's a 3.41. This is what I'm saying, though. It anchors his ERA so much. He has a 3.41 since the opening day start, but 4.04 for the season because of that 8 earned in 1 1/3.
It's absolutely wild.
I'm cheating a little bit on that one, but I do think you can still get Bailey Ober at fair prices in the trade market.
Let's see if I have this. Let's see. I believe I do. It's so funny to me that first start. I pretty much said, oh man, Bailey Ober, first start of the year. We're going to look back on this and say, okay, if you don't include the first start of the year, look how good he is.
And you're so right about that. You could not have been more correct with that framing.
Year, guys. It was 8 earned runs in 1.1 innings. That's how you get 50 extra points of ERA. 15% swing strike rate in that time since a sub one whip across 108 innings. I mean, 104 innings. Unreal. 9-4 record in 18 games. Bailey Ober's dope, makes his field dope. The new cutter is fantastic. And at 404, I like to believe that fantasy managers entering next year will be like, nah, 404. Like, that's not,
Well, here's the thing too. But you said for the second half, I think by the end of the season, the ERA should be down to like the mid threes for Ober.
Yeah,
but he is a little bit hidden right now. So if you are making trades, I don't think you have to pay full price, because to me, I think Bailey Ober should be difficult to get. And I don't know that it would be. I would trade for him in any format right now. I love Ober.
You know, similar to Ober, I mean, at least actually to Kikuchi, he's a guy who does have a strikeout rate and whiffs that is 14% swing strike rate, 25% K rate. But the ratio is 4.42 ERA and a 1.24 WHIP. This guy has certainly been an arm. I haven't told you guys yet. Don't worry. Trying to think of who I'm doing. Someone who signed a big contract, was really disappointing his first year of it and didn't quite know if that was going to work out or not. He's gone through ebbs and flows. I'm a huge fan of his recent adjustments. That's Carlos Rodon.
Okay. Yes. Looked great last night.
And
yesterday afternoon.
Right. It was He had 15 earned runs in two games. And I was just like, well, this is the worst thing ever. But showcasing the secondaries more, understanding after that game, actually saying, look, we got to figure out a different approach here because guys are just teeing off of the four-seamer. We're not really flexing other stuff. And we have to figure out how to get them off of that. And he's responded. A lot more secondaries, even at start, about 25% four-seamers, which is nuts. Just to kind of show, like, I can do this, everybody. Your scouting report is wrong. We've seen sliders and curves and changeups work well for Rodon underneath while he's still sitting 95. It's similar to the same velocity we saw in his peak years. It's all looking really good. PLV loves him. I think that Rodon is about to have a really, really good second half. And again, those ratios and honestly, the crowd of New York is impacting, I think, some feeling of Rodon. Of saying, oh, what a wasted contract. This doesn't work. We don't like them. He's a bum, da, 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 all this stuff. And it's just,
I think that's completely accurate.
Really good.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think that's just dead accurate with Rodon. You know, I even talked about it in the daily SP chart for yesterday, you know, going into that start against Tampa Bay, where it's like, I understand that the recent numbers are pretty putrid, but even in the midst of that, Rodon had a 19% strikeout minus walk rate. Like, the core skills were still there. And sometimes you really do have to anchor to those. I keep using the phrase anchor today, but you do have to really kind of latch on. You got to latch on to those numbers and realize, okay, the core skills are here. I'm not going to let 40 hits and 9 homers in a 6-start run, because that's what it was for Carlos Rodon. Mm. 40 hits and 9 homers in 6 starts. That's crazy. And yes, he was contributing to some of it, but the bottom line was the talent was still there. Went out, dealt yesterday. Looks like he's back on track. I like that pick a lot, Carlos Rodon. And again, if you're talking trade market, I don't think fantasy folks are asking a huge price point for him, unless they were bought in early in the, like, if he's one of their guys. But the people that just kind of drafted him, I think they're looking to get out from under, and they're going to see this good start as a way to finally trade for some high value for Rodon.
Yeah, and by the way, I do want to mention, I think we both completely have a different assessment of Ronel Blanco, just so we're clear here. I know that some people are probably shouting at us like, what about Ronel Blanco? Oh my God, came out of nowhere.
Yes. Do you feel just like a complete 180.
Yeah. Do you feel he's going to be good next year? This is the most squints I've seen squints over here this entire time.
380, 120 whip type vibe next year.
Interesting. Maybe. It's with Ronel Blanco, the slider is legitimately good.
I believe that. And I believe that can carry him to a 380, 120.
Enough that it does create like a Carlos Carrasco vibe to me.
Okay.
Slider and changeups are really good. And the one thing that I think Ronel Blanco does well and kind of better than what Carrasco used to do is not give in with the four-seamer. not give in with the fastballs to get to those. Like he'll throw more in the zone with the secondaries, which is a positive. So I can imagine a lot of people fading Ronel Blanco in the offseason, be like, this is a peak year from a guy out of nowhere, et cetera. And I'm not going to say that he's going to be a top 25 guy or something like that, but I wouldn't be surprised if I'm saying like the 40s or so, like, you know what? I might just go after this and he's more of the same, you know?
I think that's fair. I'm with you there because I don't think 380-120 is terrible projection. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you on the stuff that he has. And then if the BABIP goes his way again next year, then all of a sudden you're beating both those markers with Ronel
Blanco. I think
it's
also easier to make a decision on him than others because we can quickly identify like, oh yeah, no, it's lost.
He completely lost track of the slider. Right. And
or he doesn't
boom.
Have a track record that's going to keep you there longer or so.
Exactly.
So that's, there's a positive like Gausman as well for me. Yeah.
Like we keep getting bludgeoned by him because of his track record.
So anyway, is there a guy in the second half of the year also? Sorry, I just want to bring up the Blanco one because I know that we're going to get
for sure. Like, how could you not say anything? We don't have to dive deep, but I don't quit Luis Castillo. Again, the foundation of this podcast is him. But he hasn't performed super, super well. I think he can turn on a dime. So I still very much love.
You brought up a good point about him saying that his slider velocity dropped. And he's right. He lost like four starts. The slider was a slower one now. It's a worse one. And it's like, that's not going to be always the thing now, right?
Cassie? No. Let's hope not. Guys.
Like we saw like Logan Gilbert and George Kirby experiment with that and then return to the harder one.
Yeah. So we've seen a lot of their guys like experiment with some things and work. I think he'll work through it. So I'm not worried about Castillo. Thankfully, people aren't panicking about him because he's doing well enough. But I do like him. Let's see. Anybody else I like to
I'll give you one more. In the meantime,
yes, go ahead.
It's Brian Baio.
Okay.
And Brian Baio's story is so interesting because it's like last year he was sinker changeup and he needed a third pitch. And I was like, please find something. He had nothing. And then entering this year, he said, no, I'm going to try and do more sliders, remove the four seamers, and he has. And the slider all of a sudden became actually really good and consistent for him. But then he lost the changeup and it's just like, oh, okay, old skill, new skill, all that kind of stuff. And now we're finally at that point where he's gone through enough turbulence that Baio actually has a sinker, a changeup, and slider that are all reliable for him.
Okay.
And we haven't really seen that come together, but then he just went against the Dodgers and did really well against them with those three pitches.
That was
encouraging.
I'm
starting to be like, that might actually be the thing now for Baio. He gets a start against the Yankees. There was a part of me that actually thought of doing a star of the week Brian Baio this week, but it's the Yankees. I'm not going to risk that. So, I'm very intrigued on Baio, and you know, one of the things entering the season that I was harping on a bit, I think I have the last 3 years being like, this is kind of one of the strategies I have in drafts, is who are the guys who I know will go have the leash for six innings, and also have a floor that you're okay with, and also have a way to grow and get more strikeouts. And that's how you get your Alcantaras and your Wheelers and your George Kirby's and so on and so forth. I mean, this year, I guess that guy would be your, I don't know, Justin Steele.
Could have a big second half, but that one's easier because he was injured.
Right. But I mean, I'm just, you know, I don't know, Jack Flaherty, theoretically. But I'm trying to, actually, there aren't really too many. Oh, Michael King, there's one. Actually for him, gosh, he's an ace now to me. Michael King is just it.
And I gotta say, it was so hard to ever give up on him. And I'm not saying I never told people that they could cut him in a 10 or whatever, but every time I kept saying, find a way not to, but if you got to, I get it, when he was super struggling.
He was the king without a crown, but he's about to get a crown. And now Baio to me is starting to look like that kind of foundation and go. So I'm a big fan of Baio in the second half. Who you got now?
I still think, and they might just need him. I think Spencer Schwellenbach, you want to talk about another like ERA versus WHIP, you know, 4.62 ERA might turn folks off. I see a 1.16 WHIP with core skills that are strong, including an 18% strikeout minus walk. The walk rate being where it's at, I think people, maybe I'm projecting, maybe this is my fault. Let me say, I thought this, not that other people thought this, but I thought he was going to come up and kind of be standard prospect where he can miss some bats, but might have some control issues. Even though his minor league numbers don't suggest that, he was skipping AAA. He didn't have much time in AA. Yeah, so I thought he might be your kind of standard wild prospect. He has not. I've been impressed with Schwellenbach. 5% walk rate with missing bats. on ostensibly still a good team. I know they're hemorrhaging players right now, but that also opens up the door for Schwellenbach to start the rest of the year, because who are they going to go to? So I'm very encouraged by him, and I think he's a really, really intriguing starter. So I like Schwellenbach to have a little bit more juice in the tank in the second half and pitch much closer to his 367 Sierra than his 462 ERA.
Yeah, Schwellenbach's a fun one. He's weird. He's like a kitchen sink guy who throws like 95 and pitches for a winning team. But the four seamer is so hittable. It has like cutter drop, and it makes it so that guys can just tee off of this thing.
And that explains the ERA, because it's usually home runs and like meltdown starts when things don't go well.
Two home runs on the four seamer, even though they were well located. It's like, stop throwing it. He threw 32% of the time last time. And I'm like, no, you're like a kitchen sink. You got cutters, you got sinkers, you got sliders, you got curveballs.
Go to
like,
everything.
Whoa, stop doing this. And like, no, where do you get the strikeouts from? I don't know. Not the four seamer. I mean,
that's the thing. And I get it. It's easier when we're looking and analyzing. Sometimes guys go back to the pitch, you know, the bread and butter or whatever. But I agree with you. He needs fewer fastballs for Schwellenbach, more of the kitchen sink, because there is something here. It's not kitchen sink where it's all slop. It's because all of the pitches have a little dynamic to them. And you mentioned he throws 95, 96. So he's not some guy, you know, trying to trick his way through batters. He's got real stuff. But if the fastball.
Yes.
Go ahead. No. Go ahead.
All six of his pitches have a strike rate above 60%. All six. Okay?
That's fantastic.
The five of them outside the sinker, are above 10% swing strike, right? Two of them are above 15%. And then his splitter is a 28% with a 67% strike rate. I mean, Nasty. Obviously it's more of a lefty pitch, but it's like, dude.
Schwellenbach's got some juice. And I think, again, the ERA might get him ignored a little bit. You dig under the hood, paired with Atlanta's personnel issues, opens the door for him to be pitching in the rotation the rest of the second half.
Yeah, it's his mistake rate. This is a stat that we have. I think it's really fun, and we want to do more with it, where we take PLV and we say, all right, when it's below a certain threshold inside the zone, that means that it's that threshold for being hittable.
Okay.
So any pitch that you throw, how often do you throw this pitch that is double the chance of allowing hit per an average pitch? Okay.
Got it.
And his four seamer has a very bad 12% mistake rate. That four seamer is, the league average is 7%. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, that's horrendous then.
Slider, like a slider that is normally like 7% also mistake rate too, 16%.
So what is that then, that he's making mistakes this much?
He's just throwing it right down.
And they're all in the zone. Like, okay, yeah.
More in the zone. Well, you hear mistake rate, that means in the zone hits. Like, he's not going to be out of the zone, because that's just not going to be double the chance of allowing a hit.
So think does
of
he like need
middle and middle down, but also in swing heavy counts.
Correct.
Where this pitch, like if it's an 0-0 pitch here, it's not going to be the same as an 0-2 pitch here. Or
yeah.
Like a 1 or something like that. So Schwellenbach is making mistakes with a slider. I would imagine two strike counts. He is just kind of lollygagging the four seamer in the middle of the play. Like, don't do that.
Is a big part, like you just talked about how he has all these strikes thrown. Oh. Is Schwellenbach maybe somebody who needs to leave the zone a bit more?
Oh, absolutely. I would think so. I mean, lean on the slider, cutter, curve, splitter, more out of the zone. And
stop throwing the four seamer so much.
Zone rate on the four seamer and cutter are above 60%, which I think is too high.
Okay.
I think he needs to pull back on that. But these are the things that you can change.
That's what I was going to say.
This is a more believable shift in ability than someone's like, well, we just need you to have a new slider.
Yeah, exactly. We just need you to add a third pitch that is awesome. That's all you have to do to be good.
Yeah, right.
He's got the
velocity.
He's got the ingredients. We just need to give him the recipe for Schwellenbach on how to cook, because it's there. I'm really excited about him in the long term.
I tell the kids I coach, I'm not going to be upset if you miss a shot. I'm going to be upset if you make the decision to shoot it in the time when you shouldn't shoot the ball.
There you go.
All right. It's about the mental stuff. We can control that. Okay. Schwellenbach's a great pick. I really like that one. I think he's absurdly close. I'm going to give you one last one, a young guy.
Okay.
It's River Ryan, man. He looks so... Oh, River Ryan. Whoo. He's someone, though, the whole Dodgers is, I think it's like an epidemic for them, or endemic, I should say, of their organization, that they are more about stuff and not about what approach works.
100%.
Because you see this with Bobby Miller, you see this with Walker Buehler, and you saw it with Pepiot. We're seeing it now, I think, with River Ryan. We're like, you throw like 98 with a really good shape fastball, a filthy cutter and slider, and you have a changeup in there too. And watching this is like, he doesn't know what to go with in a given time. It's like the paradox of choice, where you're given 20 options and you can't choose anything, but if you give three, you can easily feel good about one choice, right?
Yep.
Like, just do that, River.
I read a book called Paradox of Choice.
One, two, or three, and only these three locations, and that's it. And like, he'd be so good. I'm excited to see that development. I think it's going to be a little shaky in the second half, but at some point we're going to be like, oh no, River Ryan, you are it.
I like it. Man. Curious though, if he winds up on a different team because they traded to get some reinforcements.
Could be a showcase, right? Could be a showcase to your Tigers for Tarik Skubal. Okay.
Clarity, relax.
All right. So we got to talk about games, and we're going to do that after this break. Okay. So Spore. We haven't, you know, we missed a week doing it, but we also did one where we included it. So we've got an update for us, for everybody listening. What is the update of the scores?
We do. So last week, I won 2-1. And so it's 27-25. It says 27-27 here. It's 27-25.
Yeah.
I put the wrong thing there. That's my fault. But we didn't score a ton last week. We both hit our streamers, Jose Quintana and Yariel Rodriguez, against Colorado and Arizona, respectively. We both botched our sits of the week. Blake Snell and Eovaldi absolutely cooked. We love that. We don't want these guys to do poorly. We're just trying to pick the one that won't do very well.
Looks so good. My Snyder, by the way. Oh, man. It was fun.
Oh, it was unbelievable, and I absolutely loved it. Christian Scott, 8 points as your star of the week against Colorado, unfortunately. I did get Yelber Diaz before he hit his bump. Amazing. He got cooked yesterday, but 16 amazing. Points for me against Toronto. Yeah. And then neither of us scoring the one-game matchup of Yusei Kikuchi, Zach Gallen. Both of them had a really rough time. If they're both under 10 points, then neither of us score. So 2 points for me, 1 point for you. It is 27-25. Why don't you give us your streamer for this week?
I said before, Luis L. Ortiz, guys, cutter is the nullifier. That is the pitch he's needed for so long. He throws it for strikes and the sliders in better spots. He's messing around the edges with his four-seamers and sinkers. So 19% rostered at Arizona. That's mine. Who's yours?
I absolutely love it. I almost went with him. Instead, I'll go with Hayden Birdsong in the rematch against Colorado, this time outside of Coors. Understand, Two starts against the same team twice in a row. The first start is not indicative of anything how the second one can go. He could get crushed. He could be great. He could be mediocre. I'll take my chances against Colorado in San Francisco with Birdsong coming off of 12 Ks in Coors. This might be his last start for a little bit. They have Ray coming back tomorrow and then Cobb soon, quote unquote. But I'm not cutting Birdsong until I know he's out of the rotation, folks. If you have him in a 15-teamer or maybe even streaming him in a 12, hold if he has another good start this week. Yeah. Don't just immediately cut. What do you think of Birdsong?
You're going to see the MILB tag or the NA slot because they wisely are realizing that the doubleheader will allow them to get a 26-man. That will be
exactly
Hayden Birdsong. They're like, cool, we'll just get a reliever for this week and then not actually have to spend an option to call him back up for that one, and then we can make a decision. So smart stuff there for the Giants. Don't worry about the demotion. It's really funny. I have not been impressed with Hayden Birdsong because, one, four-seamer is not a zone pitch or a strike pitch. I mean, it was a sub 30% strike pitch in this start, which is absolutely hilarious.
That just speaks on how bad Colorado is.
It was just so like, no. Or maybe it was a 10 over 28. So fine, it's like 35. It was bad.
Still bad,
It was so funny just watching it be like, oh God, that's so obvious. Okay, all these mistakes with it. And previously, Hayden Birdsong's best pitch has been a slider. It's just kind of been like, all right, I throw this in the zone. I've gone through things with it. I've never really been so wowed by it, but it was fine. And then the curveball had, I think, 5 whiffs out of 38 thrown before this game. Birdsong had 12 over 33 whiffs on that curveball in this game. So take that as you will, which is really strange because it's also Colorado, and you would think that breaking stuff would perform abnormally in a negative way for Birdsong. Right? So I don't know what to make of it right now. I mean, even watching it, it could have been the higher camera angle at Colorado that just kind of makes breaking stuff look worse. But I just wasn't like blown away by this. I felt he wasn't really locating anything that well. The curve obviously landing down and in the zone, but in out would always be wrong, or just he never really felt in control of the whole thing. And there were a lot of like really meaty breaking balls like down the middle that, I mean, it was like a 2-0 pitch or so 2-1, and Blackman just like grounds out on a meaty like cement mixer slider down the pipe. I'm just like, what? I don't know. It was very strange. So my comparison is, everyone's going to hate me for this. Remember there's another prospect who came up who wasn't very good for a bit, all of a sudden had like a 10 strikeout game and then also had a 12 strikeout game, and we don't care.
Who?
It's DJ Hurz.
Ooh, and like, that's fair.
This happens when like a guy like DJ Hurz is able to throw four seamers up and then change ups down as he wants. Great. But Hayden Birdsong is the same thing of like, you had no command at all before.
The team bailed.
Game where it all kind of worked, but then like, that doesn't mean it's going to be there next time. So
no, the team bailed him, but that's why I'm going against this team again.
And again, better situation, Oracle Park.
And so like I said, if things go well in this, hold, see what they do with Cobb and Ray and anybody else. Completely. But I agree with Nick that I'm not like over the moon for Birdsong. It's more of a deep league play against a terrible team.
Yeah, it was the worst review I've ever given for a 27.45% CW start.
For a 12 punchy gem, and you're like, well, this, and this, but it's all legit too, right? And as somebody reading your stuff, I wouldn't want you to just be like, oh, this was great because the results were great. That's the whole point, is for you to break down. Let's do some sits of the week, though. We are both in the same series here.
Yeah, that's right. I got Nestor Cortez at Fenway because Nestor Cortez is weird, man. And I can't make sense of the dude. And it's like, well, it's Fenway and that stinks. So I'm just going to say, all right, sit of the week.
Yep. Ta-da. Cutter Crawford against the Yankees. Cutter Crawford also a little weird in that when he's bad, home runs are the real problem. Gave up 52 homers on Sunday Night Baseball. Yeah, I still really do like him. Still lots to like, but against the Yankees, even the struggling Yanks, I'd rather not if I can avoid it. So Cutter Crawford is a shallow league sit for me. What about Star of the Week? What are we thinking?
Tyler Anderson doesn't get enough love, guys. I know it's like a Toby or whatever, but that changeup is so good once again. And we just saw him dominate the Mariners with four seamers because that's what he should be doing. He gets a lot of vert on that four seamer. Cutter's been solid too. He's a six inning guy, quality start guy, two runs over six with seven base runners and six strikeouts. I'll take that all day with a win against the Oakland Athletics.
Yep, got no problems with that for the Star of the Week, Tyler Anderson. My Star of the Week is Michael Wacha. Still only 35% roster going up against Arizona. Yeah, and we'll just throw changeups all day with Anderson and Wacha and get the job done against Oakland and Arizona, respectively. Arizona, obviously, a better team, but so is his supporting cast of KC, so I like him. And then our one-game matchup, we had some good ideas. Shota Imanaga, Seth Lugo, Eric Fetty, Brian Wu, Tarek Skubal, Joe Ryan, River Ryan, Spencer Arrighetti. That was before I even knew you were going to give River Ryan some love.
That was going to be a wash.
Yeah, I was like, oh, and then you start bringing him up. I was like, oh, he likes him too. Taj Bradley, Chris Bassett, Jose Barrios, John Gray, Shane Boz, Nick Lodolo. But those were all just consolation to Michael King versus Grayson Rodriguez.
Yeah, who was it against John Gray?
Jose Barrios.
Yeah, there it is. I want to hear it again.
Oh, Jose Barrios. I can't roll my R's. I'm not great with accents, but I try my best. And it is Jose Barrios.
No, it's beautiful what you did. I love it. Michael King versus Grayson Rodriguez. I assumed we weren't even talking yet, and I just put in Michael King for myself and Grayson Rodriguez for you because that's the obvious one.
You could have flipped it the other way and it wouldn't have bothered me, though. That's the beauty with these two. I love King as well, but I got Gray Rod here. Go ahead, talk about King a little bit.
Fun game because I love both of these guys. Grayson Rodriguez, honestly, is not at his peak, guys. It's really wild to me. It's just such good stuff. He's getting his four seamers when he needs to. The secondaries are getting enough done, but those could be like proper Blake Snell blueprint down and he'd be absurd. Meanwhile, Michael King is just spotting things and throwing sweepers effectively and changes effectively and sinkers effectively. It's like, oh my gosh, you're so good. And I know it's against Baltimore. At least he's got Baltimore to help, but honestly, he needs more help against lefties than he does righties. So I don't know. I'm just going to be like, I don't care. It's Michael King. I'm not going over.
Yeah, I get the better support by a better team. Not like San Diego sucks, but you get the better pitcher right now. King is pitching brilliantly. Not that Grayson's been bad. King's just in his element. He can handle any comers. I would start King all formats everywhere all the time because he's another guy that had some early hiccups that might be stuck in the back of your mind and you might not realize that Michael King is down to a 3.28 ERA and a 1.19 WHIP. Mm-hmm. Considering where he was, that is amazing. So I like both these guys, but I'm going with Grayson this week against Michael King and the Padres.
Yeah, this would be the scepter start because it's King Rod.
That's good. I like that. Yeah. That's a good one from you. I mean, you usually come with good ones. By the way, since getting cooked by Colorado at home, which we were all like, oh, come on, Michael King. If you get beat up in Coors, that's one thing. But at home, since getting torched by them for six earned and 5 1/3, has a 2.40 ERA with 74 Ks in 64 innings. That's 11 starts for Michael King.
Huge. I love him. Oh, but, he's so good. I mean, I'm going to be in on him next year probably too. Same. But all right, I think that's going to be it. The fire is waning. The birds are chirping. Our eyes are heavy as we sink deeper into our leather seats. Spore, it's so wonderful being here with you. What are you up to this week?
Same old, same old. Back in the routine. A little bit of a break last week with the All-Star break. Took some days to disconnect from baseball. I really only need like a day and I'm already back in. So Wednesday and Thursday being no games, it was like one day too many. But back into the routine, daily SP charts, doing the pod with Justin, doing my OTP stuff, delivering content on the OTP channel on Twitch, and just back into the grind before the deadline here. How about yourself?
Beautiful. I'm flying off to Texas on Sunday. So I'm going to try to stream. I got one of those magnetic things for your iPhone to make that your webcam. Okay. So I'm going to be using that. And I think next week our fireside chat is actually going to be the audio from our trade deadline stream. So make sure that you guys tune in for that. Maybe 4 p.m. Eastern time, maybe a little bit earlier. We'll figure that out. But be here on the Pitchel site, on the Fangraphs site. We'll be live streaming from there. So go check it out. And of course, on playback.tv/pitcherless is where you can also find us. But I think that's going to do it for this episode of Fireside Chat. So on behalf of Paul Spore, my name is Nick Pollock, and it's an always fun joining you by the fire.
Thanks for listening to today's Fireside Chat with Paul Spore and Nick Pollock. Follow both Paul and Nick on Twitter @Spore and @PitcherList.